It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In an internal House memo obtained by Fox News, a senior counsel for the House Intelligence Committee urged Republican Chairman Devin Nunes almost 3 weeks ago to pursue contempt of Congress citations against the Department of Justice and the FBI. Congressional investigators accused those agencies of withholding key documents and an FBI witness that could shed light on whether U.S. officials under President Obama relied on the infamous anti-Trump dossier to justify surveillance against associates of Donald Trump.
We're trying to work with DOJ and the FBI. We hope that they will comply, but if they don't, they leave us very little option, very few options. We sent subpoenas out in June, July, and August that still haven't been complied with, so I think stonewalling would be putting it lightly.
The dossier is the compendium of salacious and mostly unverified allegations about then-candidate Trump and others on his campaign that was compiled last year by the opposition research firm Fusion GPS and based in part on Russian sourcing. Bank records obtained by the Nunes panel revealed that the dossier was funded by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. GOP lawmakers have spent 8 months, including issuing a subpoena on August 24, probing whether then-FBI Director James Comey and other officials who received the dossier in July 2016 used it to place surveillance on Trump associates.
Are you investigating the claims made in the dossier?
Not going to comment on that, Mr. Castro.
House Speaker Paul Ryan, who was briefed this week on the panel's probe, is said to be working behind the scenes to advance the case following stern public comments last month.
We've had these document requests with the administration and the FBI in particular for a long time, and they've been stonewalling.
Nunes's counsel wrote, after 8 months of ongoing verbal, written, and subpoenaed requests and engagement by committee and House leadership at the highest levels, DOJ-FBI continues to impede the committee's legitimate investigative efforts and hinders the committee's ability to conduct effective oversight. Staff therefore recommends further congressional compliance actions, a phrase sources said was code for contempt citations.
All right, that was James Rosen on Fox This Week. Maybe the biggest story of the week. But the underlying story is not just about the Russian dossier and not just about the FBI refusing to respond to subpoenas from the House. By the way, the Congress has oversight over the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Justice Department. They're executive branches, but they also answer to Congress. It's pretty stunning that they will not respond to questions about this dossier. But the question that's deeper than that to me is what I've been telling you for months. Something has happened in the Federal Bureau of Investigation that has corrupted it to the very deepest levels. Maybe not the field agents so much, good men and women serving, but somewhere along the executive lines, something has gone wrong. Many are pointing to James Comey. Of course, he was fired by Donald Trump for all the reasons that we've talked about, his mishandling of the Clinton case, his sort of leaking information to a New York Times reporter. But before that, many would trace the turning point for the FBI to the previous director, Robert Mueller, who is now the special counsel prosecuting, looking for evidence to link President Donald Trump with the Russians. So what about Robert Mueller? People are going back into his background and talking about his record. I recall very distinctly saying to you, my audience, that one of the things that I personally knew about Bob Mueller that was the most concerning was his overseeing the purge of training manuals on Islam at the FBI, at Quantico, etc. That's a huge story. And so we've discussed it before, but it's been some time. Now, fresh evidence is coming forth about Mueller's oversight of that, his testimony. What exactly did he do? And what does that say about his wisdom and judgment in regard to his current position? I've asked Steve Coughlin to join us today because Steve, who's been a guest with us many times, was deeply involved in this purge, and he's going to explain that. But let me explain who he is first. Currently, he's a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and also a Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. His book, which we discussed on more than one occasion at this microphone, was Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. Before that, Steve, you have to know, is an attorney. He's a decorated intelligence officer. He was one of the Pentagon's leading experts on Islamic law. He was in demand as a lecturer at the service staff institutions like the National Defense University, the Army and Navy War College, the Marine Corps headquarters at Quantico, Joint Forces Staff College, the FBI Counterterrorism Unit. And I could go on and on about what Steve Coughlin was doing prior to the entree of Robert Mueller as FBI director. So, Steve, first of all, welcome to the show. And secondly, you were part of this purge that was instituted by Bob Mueller as FBI director. Can you, I know you've told the story a million times, it must be told a million and one times. What were you doing when it was the beginning of President Barack Obama's second term? What was your position and what were you doing?
Well, at the beginning of that administration, and maybe going right before the administration, I was on the Joint Chiefs of Staff Intelligence Directorate doing issues having to do with how Islamic law impacts the threat doctrine of the enemy we fight. And I was pushed out and then brought back in through a OSD program and did the same thing. And part of that job was to go around to the Joint Forces Staff Colleges, the war colleges, the information ops operations courses, and the FBI, for example, and brief up on how this doctrine works. And all of a sudden, I see this news release from NPR in 2011 saying that, you know, making all these derogatory statements, none of which were true, saying that these people need to be stopped. And then all of a sudden they say one of these people is going to be briefing at the CIA. And then all of a sudden that program was canceled. The place where I was going to lecture, to get me pushed out, they had to cancel the whole program. And they basically said all such training will stop until the DHS comes up with a new program. And all of a sudden that new program became the CVE. So I can actually say that this whole purge program started with me. Specifically targeted me. And so all of a sudden I start seeing these articles coming out of Wired magazine by this guy named Spencer Ackerman, and he targets me. And within a couple hours, CARE comes up with a demand, and all of a sudden I get banned from this place. And
okay,
that
now
place.
Let's go back just a second, because you're using a lot of acronyms that are not familiar to people.
Sorry.
You know, to your mother. Think of your mother. Think of your sister just sitting out in hinterland, okay? So you said that this purge came at the after an article that was written by a Wired magazine reporter. And as I understand it, that went right to FBI Director Mueller, that information. It was Spencer Ackerman, and his information was coming from a gentleman named Mohammed Alibieri, which I'm sure you have a lot to say about. Who is that?
Well, Alibieri was a person who was somewhat stalking me on the inside. He got a job with DHS. I know that they compared notes a couple times. I quoted that in my book. But I think what's really important also to point out is that it started with an NPR article and then tripped over to Wired Magazine and Spencer Ackerman. But all of a sudden, I was briefing a contentious class at the JFSC, the Joint Forces Staff College, and there was a contentious Air Force officer who basically said, you know, who challenged me on certain things I said. There was oversight hearing between Lundgren where he grilled a man named Stockton, who was Assistant Secretary of Defense. The reason I say this is because this would be an example of what you're talking about today, where you're talking about an Article I Congress and its oversight responsibility under Article I of the Constitution is stonewalling these people. The Justice Department is stonewalling them then. Well, what this person said when he was on staff with this guy, Assistant Secretary of Defense Stockton, was that they decided they didn't want to answer these oversight hearings then too. And so what we saw was this completely built-in information operation, really, to kind of follow me where I went and have it turned out to be Wired Magazine and Spencer Ackerman making some comments and accusations, followed up by a demand, followed up with me being banned. Well, that led to some oversight hearings where there was a call for purge, not just of materials, but of the individuals doing it. And so you had these oversight hearings in 2012 where Mueller was being queried by members of Congress where the question was asked about why are they purging these materials. And it turned out that he acknowledged that there was a purge, said there wasn't really that much information that was purged, but all of my information was purged. And the whole thing that bothered me was I was never informed of any process for me to defend my work product. I everything I ever briefed was meant to meet the rules of evidence. I'm a lawyer. I don't want to be putting stuff out there that can't be demonstrated to be true. And it turned out that the people the FBI relied on to do this background were contractors, all of whom had an interest in disqualifying other people, which made and I'm breaching back on my memory, that made them as contractors, the only way they could make that be serve in that capacity as being overseers of the purge is that they recused themselves from the contracts that followed, which of course they did not. So I think what we're seeing today in the Justice Department is something that has been a continuing activity on certain behaviors, and it's just horrific.
Yes,
and
I think
it's starting to surface for people that they're starting to see this. I mean, I think when it was happening with me, it was kind of stuff that people who follow the stuff saw it, but now it's just in your face.
Yes,
that there's a group of people. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I wanted to give just a few more details about what we know now about Mueller's involvement in this, Steve. Because Jordan Satchel wrote a really nice piece about this for Conservative Review, and I want to read just a little bit of this to give some context. This is what Jordan writes. While serving as FBI director, Mueller presided over an effort to silence counterterrorism experts from discussing the threat posed by radical Islamic ideologies. Instead of providing the tools his agents needed to fight the ideological warfare against the continuing rise of radical Islam in America, Mueller handicapped his agents because he seemingly prioritized making sure that nobody was offended over keeping America safe. Now, you talked about that Wired magazine article by Ackerman, but then following on that, a coalition of Islamic groups wrote a letter to Director Mueller demanding that he purge the training materials. Can you tell us about that, Steve?
I recall seeing a letter. Yes, I know that generally that a letter was sent to Mueller. I know that they also sent one to the head of the White House person in charge of counterterrorism, who ended up becoming, of course, the head of the CIA, where they basically, I'm trying to remember the head of the CIA at the time. I'm having a mind cramp.
Yes, John Brennan. Yeah.
Where the letter was sent, signed by numerous members of the people who represent Muslim Brotherhood interests and front groups, where Brennan came back and said, yeah, we're going to do this. And then later there was another letter to them. We specifically answered that charge. And we know that the same thing happened with Mueller as well. I saw the complaint that was sent to the Pentagon, the document that the decision to suppress work product that analyzed Islam were specifically one document written by Ackerman that was his article. Not one of them could be reduced down to a fact. They were not just, it was not even, the accusations were more in the form of an editorial rant. And so here you are, you're working very hard to prove a case. You're trying to show that you can look at the Muslim Brotherhood, you can look at documents that met the federal rules of evidence that were admitted in the court of law, the explanatory memorandum, for example, where the judge himself said that the documents that we used were key in leading to finding of guilty, the guilty finding in these people, showing
Steven,
that they had a plan. Yeah.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we have to take a commercial break. Steve Coughlin is my guest. And again, his book is Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. And the issue that we're discussing in particular is the purging of the FBI training manuals by Robert Mueller, who's now the lead investigator, alleging that the president is involved with the Russians. Can his judgment be trusted? Many of us think not. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
G. Judicial Watch exclusively obtained droves of records back in 2013 documenting how, under Mueller's leadership, the FBI purged all anti-terrorism training material deemed offensive to Muslims. The agency eliminated the valuable anti-terrorism training material and curricula after Mueller met with various Islamic organizations, including those with documented ties to terrorism. Among them were two organizations, Islamic Society of North America and Council on American-Islamic Relations, named by the United States government as unindicted co-conspirators in the 2007 Holy Land Foundation terrorist financing case. CARE is a terrorist front group with extensive links to foreign and domestic Islamists. It was founded in 1994 by three Middle Eastern extremists, Omar Ahmad, Nihad Awad, and Rafiq Jaber, who ran the American propaganda wing of Hamas, known then as the Islamic Association for Palestine. The records obtained as part of Judicial Watch's lawsuit showed that Mueller, who served 12 years as FBI chief, met with the Islamic organizations on February 8, 2012, to hear their demands. Shortly later, the director assured the Muslim groups that he had ordered the removal of presentations and curricula on Islam from FBI offices nationwide. The purge was part of a broader Islamist operation designed to influence the opinions and actions of persons, institutions, governments, and the public at large.
All right, that's a report from Aim for Truth, and it kind of summarizes what we're talking about with our guest, Steve Coughlin, who was one of those trainers who was purged. And, of course, Steve is more than a trainer. He is a he's a terrorism expert. He was the lead briefer, noted for his knowledge about Islam, for the Pentagon, for the FBI, and he was summarily dismissed because Robert Mueller decided to listen to the Islamist, the Muslim Brotherhood operatives among us. And by the way, Mueller, as I understand it, shielded the identities of those what he called outside experts. And so when people tried to figure out why things were being purged and what the reasons were, they weren't allowed to know that. In fact, the information that was purged was classified, so nobody could see it. And even Congress people couldn't go in, could not see it, except for people like Michelle Bachmann, who went in and viewed the classified documents all by herself. She wasn't allowed to take anyone with her, and then she was not allowed to speak publicly about what it was that she saw. So sealed off from the public were these pieces of information that the FBI had used to train their agents. So Bob Mueller did this as he was director of FBI in 2011, I believe it was 2011 in February. Now he's special counsel, prosecuting or trying to find evidence of a link between Russia, some sort of collusion, and the Trump administration. And the question, of course, is his judgment. My guest, Steve Coughlin, has a comment about that. What does that say about his judgment, Steve?
Well, I don't think the question is, can his judgment be trusted on the stuff that's going on today? I think that at a very basic level, what you have is a clear conflict of interest where he should be disqualified on the grounds of conflict of interest. That he's asking to comment on things that he was a part of. So and to me, it's just staggering that we have to, the very fact that we're asking, can we trust his judgment, already accepts the fact that in any real situation, in any professional legal situation, he should be recused. And I think that this is the whole thing. I think it just has people staggered. You get the sense back then is, to me, I look at it like I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We have an enemy, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Brotherhood domestically, if you take at face value what they say in their explanatory memorandum, that they want to overthrow the American government. In the explanatory memorandum, civilization jihad by our hands. And I think that what that means is, so long as we're confronting that, the enemy abroad, using violence domestically through their own documents saying subversion and penetration, that it was my job when I was tasked to do it to actually take a factual, real analysis of it. And I think you've seen some of the things I write. They're painfully dry because they painfully go out of the way to prove an evidentiary standard that they're quoting them, their documents in motion to show, in their motion, to show that this is exactly what they're saying. So that I take the suppression of that information from groups that can be associated with that explanatory memorandum. I see that whether it was Mueller then or whether it's McMaster today saying we're not going to look at this stuff as the head of the national security advisor, is an order for people not to follow through under oath to support and defend the Constitution. Mm-hmm. The reason I looked at it is because they said they follow it, and it's a fact that they follow it. Now, we could have looked in at these documents and shown that they misinterpret it, but we still have to look at their statements and align them with the documents to come to that conclusion. And so my point is the suppression of that information is the blinding of our intelligence and law enforcement against the evidence. Because it's the pattern of behavior, right? We show that they say they follow Islamic law. They write documents quoting Islamic law for what they do. We find those Quranic quotes. We find those quotes from the Hadith, the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. We find specific quotes in Islamic law that have standing in the Islamic community for what they say. So even if you could say many Muslims disagree with this, and of course there are, we can still prove that when they make their case, when they make their threat doctrine destroy America, they base it on concept of Islamic law that don't depend on their ideology to show that it's there. It's there. And that if we do not account for it, we cannot have a strategic understanding of the nature of the threat, and therefore we cannot defeat him.
Yes,
we
and
cannot
Steve,
have.
Well, ahead. Let me just say it's not just theoretical either. I mean, you're speaking in principles, which you think in and you write in, but you've also had hands-on, and you know then under Robert Mueller and under Comey, too, that investigations of alleged terror attacks or even found terror attacks were pathetic. A Boston Marathoner, Boston Marathon bomber, Tamarin Tsarnaev, they ignored warnings about him. That's just one example. We have seen them going to these mass murders like in the Orlando nightclub and actually have, you know, members of MOS accompany them when they're doing their interviews. It has had real consequences. Real people have died because of Mueller's decisions.
You have Anwar al-Awlaki, who they identified as a member of the bin Laden group at the time, is how they classified it, that they didn't pick up, even as they watched him go into the Pentagon to advise our admirals and generals on moderate Islam. You had Anwar al-Awlaki, who was a known member of Hamas, who was designated as a terrorist organization, a known member of al-Qaeda. The FBI knew that when they watched him going in and giving the Friday sermon in the Capitol building. You have the fact that they had actual communications between Major Hassan and al-Awlaki, where he was committing himself to al-Qaeda and committing himself to a suicide operation where they did not act. So the point of it is that you're exactly right. This gets my blood boiling. At what point do we say those people at the Boston Marathon, those people at Fort Hood, those people who were later killed by al-Awlaki, who remember those pilots who flew into the Pentagon were getting quote unquote spiritual advice by a man who was understood to be an imam associated with these groups? At what point do we stop saying al-Qaeda caused those deaths and it was the negligence of those entities that allowed it to happen? So you're right. We're not speculating on this. We have their documents. So when Mueller suppresses the information that gives us the ability to understand their threat doctrine, to provide warning and shut down the entities at the operational level, the nonviolent level, that's an order not to do your job. It's an order not to support and defend the Constitution. And it just blows me. Why is that not understood to be an unlawful order?
Well, I think
so long as I can follow the evidence.
Well, I was just saying that the thing of it is, of course, as you well know, nobody knows what you're talking about, except for some of us who are completely clued into it. Hardly anyone in America knows what Bob Mueller and James Comey have done. They're beginning to pick it up, I think, with these most recent attacks, this insistence almost immediately, that it's nothing to do with terrorism, or it's a lone wolf, or whatever, it's irrational. The kinds of investigations they're doing into these terrible tragedies. But now maybe this helps them to understand the foolishness that goes into thinking about that.
You know, if you take one step back from what you're saying and start from this point, the very way they structure the way we talk about this in the media and the national policy debates guarantees that you can't get to the issue. Do you know what was obscene? You know, you were quoting CARE. You were talking about CARE and you were talking about ISNA, I believe it was. There's a group called Muslim Advocates, which is run by a woman named Farana Khara. And on the evening of the day they had the bombings at in San Bernardino, you had the head of DHS on her dais. Now, if you ever take a look at the video of it or picture, it says Muslim advocates, and underneath it says freedom and justice for all. And it takes someone a little bit of understanding to realize freedom and justice is the name of the Muslim Brotherhood when they define themselves as a party. So here it is. You have the Attorney General of the United States of America sitting under a Muslim advocate's freedom and justice for all, freedom from the laws of man, justice according to Sharia, threatening anybody who would suggest that the self-proclaimed announced jihadi killings of a Jew at a Christmas celebration in California could lead to violence. The threat wasn't against the people who did this, and she did it on a freedom and justice dais. So what does the average FBI agent know about who he can't go to follow evidence based on the self-proclaimed threat doctrine? But more importantly, because I don't believe all Muslims agree with this in America, I think there's a whole lot of Muslims who came to America just to avoid this type of stuff. What does it say to an American, a Muslim in America, about ever going to the FBI or DHS for information about terrorism when they realize that their frontline cultural support are the Muslim Brotherhood, where you have Mueller making specific, everybody in the Muslim community knows who the Brotherhood is. And yeah. What do you think they think about when they go to the FBI about terrorism? They know who they're going to lean on. They're going to say, well, let me talk to my friend Nihad Awad.
Yeah. Steve, I'll tell you, interesting. This is a small thing, but it really wasn't a small thing. You know that I don't often weave my husband into this particular discussion, but he was an FBI agent. And I remember right after he retired, they have to retire early, as you know, pretty young. He saw some really suspicious activity by a Muslim who we came in contact with, and he was very concerned about it. He contacted the FBI as a just newly retired agent and knew the people in the unit, tried to report this, and they wouldn't listen. They wouldn't even listen to him, a former FBI agent. They would not. They said they couldn't open up an investigation on something like that. It was too speculative, and it sort of, I think it was something like it violated his rights or something like that. It was just bizarre. That's how bad it was. So how does John Q. Citizen call up the FBI and say, my neighbor's, you know, putting stuff in the garage that I see a lot of activity over there. How could you report that to the FBI right now and accomplish anything?
Well, I think that the thing is I think you hit it right. I think that in the Department of Defense, I think at the field agent level in the FBI, I think at the field agent level at all these organizations, that these people are doing their job, most of them, let's just say. And they realize that they're looking at a political class of their organization that exists to shut them down. And I think that we've seen this starting all the way back to the Purge of Me. You see it right now with this guy, McCullough, who was the IG for the intelligence community, who was being shut down on affirmative, no question about it, leaks of highly classified information. You're starting to see, and I think that what's happening, you know, not the privates and the lieutenants, but maybe at the lieutenant colonels and the senior field agents, that they realize and they're starting to see that their career, their survival to retirement even, is premised on not doing their job against a political class that has now made completely insulated themselves, not only from the laws that are based, that exist to defend national security, but they see themselves as being above. Well, they have reinterpreted the oath to support and defend the Constitution in a way that absolves them from whatever they do. I hate to say it because it sounds like you're a tinfoil guy, but these people, it's not the fact that they think that they're above the law; it's the emerging reality that they are above the law. That's true.
And
a country based on rule of law.
That really is true.
That's horrific.
Aren't we seeing that in every area? We're seeing it in the sex abuse cases on Capitol Hill, where all the millions of dollars of tax money was paid out, secretive arrangements made to cover them, secret lists, you know, so that they really are Obamacare. They don't have to do the same rules as the American people. We're talking about Congress, but of course there are other levels of elite, like Hollywood elite, who up until recently have paid no price for their personal behavior. There is a controlling class that's developed. And that's, you know, Steve, you think about it, that's one of the things that was so unique and wonderful about America, was that people were actually free. And there was some level of justice. And Lady Justice was blind. And that's what we have to get back. We cannot allow for this. And that's why we're telling this story today about Bob Mueller. When we return, you mentioned this Charles McCullough. And I'd like to talk to you about that. I want to play a couple of clips of his interactions with Catherine Herridge this week, because that's a stunning story. And since you were so deeply involved in the intelligence agencies, I would really like to know more of your comments about that. So let's talk about it when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Hard to believe that today is December the 1st. Really hard to believe, but it is. And we are doing what we do, we've been doing for the last several years, meaning the American Family Association, and that is being aggressive in our efforts to keep Christ in Christmas. Now, that may sound trivial, but it isn't. When you consider, again, that our discussion today, we know that the Islamists are at war against people of the book. That means Christians and Jews. And certainly they want to remove any artifact, any semblance, any mention of the word Jesus, the Savior. they have Jesus in their Quran, but not Jesus as the Savior and as the Son of God. It's a different Jesus, not the same at all. And so keeping Christ in Christmas is actually pretty profound right now. We're offering these wristbands that say, keep Christ in Christmas. They're great conversation starters. They're great things for your kids to wear, your Sunday school class, your friends. You can get them and pass them out and share them. And they would, again, start some great conversations that there is a Savior for this really fallen, messed up world. So if you'd like them, go to afastore.net, afastore.net, or call 877-927-4917. 877-927-4917. All right, this week, Catherine Herridge gave voice to a national security expert, Charles McCullough, who was one of the inspector generals for the intelligence agencies, who had an incredible story to tell about attempts to threaten and silence him. And so I want you to hear what Catherine has to say before we go back to Steve Coughlin. Here it is.
With more than two decades of government service, the Obama administration nominated Charles McCullough Inspector General for the 17 intelligence agencies.
If you don't have your independence, you have nothing.
Few people know more about the classified Clinton emails and the fallout.
All of a sudden, people started talking about how independent I was and how wonderful that I was independent.
That independence was tested in 2015 after the intelligence agencies found their classified information in the Clinton emails. As word spread, McCullough went to senior officials, including Director of National Intelligence James Clapper.
He said, this is extremely reckless. And he mentioned something about the campaign will have heartburn.
Did you tell the CIA Director John Brennan that there was classified information?
Oh, he already knew. It wasn't me who told him what was happening. He'd already been well briefed on it.
After two emails sent by Clinton aides that contained classified information kickstarted the FBI probe, government records show a senior State Department official who worked for Secretary Clinton allegedly pressed the FBI to downgrade the classification as part of a quid pro quo.
Is that how the government's supposed to operate?
No, classification is not negotiable.
By February 2016, campaign emails released via WikiLeaks suggest Clinton's lawyer and a senior congressional staffer shared information to target McCullough.
But I think there was certainly a coordinated strategy. I not only think it, I think it very, very much so.
A former Clinton campaign spokesman did not return Fox's calls, but in a tweet did not dispute the claims and tried to cast doubt on McCullough's credibility. Fox News also asked about this March 2016 letter from seven senior Democrats, including Senator Dianne Feinstein. It said they had serious concerns about the Clinton email review. Feinstein's office wanted McCullough to respond. The incident turned into a standoff 6 weeks before the election.
And I flat out told the staff director I was not going to respond to it. I said, tell her I'll resign tonight.
All right, so that's at least a portion of the conversation between Charles McCullough and Catherine Herridge on Fox. Does that sound familiar? Steve Coughlin, again, Steve is our guest, and he's the author of Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. Steve himself was purged in 2011 from being able to train FBI agents and people at the highest levels of our military and intelligence services on the threat of jihad. And so when they say that they were attacking his credibility, that sounds familiar, doesn't it, Steve? That's what they did to you.
Absolutely it does. And, you know, I have to tell you, when you're a person who decides to dedicate your life as an American to the defense of this country, and you find that when you get to the point where you know your subject matter and you know you take a professional approach to it, and you look up and you realize the people who are going to be taking this information will use it against you, not because it's wrong, not because it's unethical, but because it's correct and it's professional and it's and you did your job and you did it in a way that you could look at everybody and said, this is good, and realize that this is what's going to make you get attacked. And then that makes you have to start to consider who gets to the top anymore. How do they make these selections? You know, I can't help but step back for a second and think about how leading into this, you'd had a discussion about keeping Christ in Christmas. You know, it was about a year ago. You know, you read stuff in the Bible, princes and principalities, and you move on to the next verse. And it's like, I remember maybe a year or 18 months ago saying to myself, oh, my gosh. This is America, and this is the first time I literally had to sit back and say, you cannot put faith in princes and principalities, and that's America today. And I remember thinking to myself, where are we? How did we get here? I didn't mean to put that into this discussion, but I think in some way to those people who are looking at, but if I'm working in national security or if I'm doing law enforcement for counterterrorism, and I change my analysis so I can get that promotion, at what point do I say those people are dead because of me? This country is now not strong anymore because of me. And I think that that's where you realize all of a sudden you see these very successful people decide they have to leave the government. I remember being at the Army War College briefing colonels, and at one point they said, Steve, you know, we know the game, and I might become a brigadier general or some unimportant thing, but I can't play the game. And it became very clear that they knew what the game was. And they realized that by deciding to do what they thought was right according to their own personal integrity, according to their oath, and according to what they knew, they had to take themselves out of running to get those extra stars and those policy-forming combat commander leading positions at the top. So I think that when you listen to what's going on, it is the certain reality that we have a political class that has made a decision, a purposeful decision, that they will enforce their narratives over facts. They will enforce their narratives over all the oaths to support and defend the Constitution, because they have decided that they are the leadership of America. And they get to decide what the rules are. And they get to decide what's right for America in a way that can be completely contrary to what people who grow up and decide, I believe in America, and I want to commit my life to protecting it. And these are the people who get attacked. And you can go all the way back to 2011 when Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was saying that they need to use old-fashioned techniques of peer pressure and shaming to attack Americans who would do that, when she committed it to a foreign entity in a foreign country. The OIC in Turkey. And so I look at this and I just think it's horrific. You know, when people will say, oh, there's that Charles McCullough. He's some bureaucrat. He was the Inspector General for the Intelligence Community of the United States of America. That's who he was. And his job was to take an unbiased but professional look at what's going on and come up with findings. You know, there was another story that Herridge did preceding to that, where they had this guy, Richard Goldstein, follow this news story. And he was the campaign advisor. And you would think to listen to him that it was kind of like just like technically classified stuff that was put out there. It's my understanding that she had stuff being put on her server that somebody was stripping classified information on that were SAP, special access program stuff, human information and SIGINT information, some of our deepest secrets. You know, this is stuff that if it gets compromised, we are seriously set back, or people die, or programs get eliminated that bring real intelligence out there. Now, you know, I could be wrong on what my impression is of that, but I will tell you, as somebody who ended up being a lawyer who worked in the intelligence community, I was always one of the people assigned to do investigations at very low-level security violations, most of all by people who did it accidentally. And, you know, we held them to a strict scrutiny standard, meaning the strict scrutiny was the fact that the leak happened compromises national security and you'd be found guilty. And the thing of it is every time you're given access to classified material, you have to sit into a briefing where you have to sign that you know that this is true. So the whole way they talk about this at the national level, I think what really concerns me is that they talk about it at the national level, the political level, as if this is just kind of a trivial thing. And it's not trivial. No. There are national security things at risk. There are lives at risk.
Steve, this has been going on now a long time. You know, the wounds are not quite as fresh for you, and they are personal for you. But, of course, what you're describing is something that has affected each and every one of us, as I've tried to make clear, and has caused the deaths of people. Now we have an FBI director. I don't know anything about this current director. Do you have any reason to be encouraged? We just have a couple of minutes left. Do you see any shift in anything, or is this just the march on to our destruction?
Well, you know, I think that this last series of elections, we put Republicans in power to change this, and clearly they're really not interested in doing that. We saw Trump become president, clearly articulating it to a population that responded. I think people knew the shortcomings of Trump when they saw this, and I think they're somewhat slack-jawed. Can I read a quote to you?
Sure, quickly.
Okay, think of the term spurious nationalism, tired dogmas of the past, and ash heap of history. And I'm going to ask you, what do you think they're talking about? What document in American history are they talking about?
Well, the Constitution.
It says,
and
to
the
abandon
Bible.
the ideals we have advanced around the globe, to refuse the obligations of international leadership for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems, is unpatriotic as an attachment to any other tired dogma of the past that Americans consign to the ash heap of history. Do you know who said that?
I don't.
John McCain. The ash heap of history, spurious nationalism, tired dogmas, because the international agenda is more important. And I think when we look at what's going on, we're looking at that. And I tell you, it's something where you just kind of say, how do we, you know, on that question of princes and principalities, we're at a point where we're not getting out of this until we understand that this is the question we have to resolve, sitting in a room in the quietness of our own time, contemplating where we're at and how we got here. Because I think we're in a very serious place.
I think so too, Steve. And I have to say about you, you know, because I know you, you're a strongly committed believer in Jesus and that, you know, in the scriptures. And so that informs, that's not what you read, that's not what you lecture about, and that's not the world in which you travel. But that is kind of the root upon which you base your thinking. That's the way you look at the world. And I think it is the way of truth. I think the God we serve is the God of truth. And I don't think you can explain all of that's happening in this world right now without acknowledging the forces of good and evil. It's just irreconcilable, and it certainly only makes sense when you understand that there's something much more at stake here than just the details of what we're discussing.
You know, I think you're right. You know, a couple of years ago, Joe Schmitz, who was a former IG, Inspector General for the Department of Defense, he said, Steve, you know, you really have to start looking at first things. You know, go back to the first things. And, you know, what I find is when we're not allowed to talk about things like religion, in government, all I think about is the fact that we created a constitution, and the constitution we created was just was to protect what? A nation that was created in the Declaration of Independence. And what does that nation, what does that document say? It's a nation, which means it's one people, one language, one way of seeing the world that's formed around what? Rights endowed by the Creator. And so what does that tell you? Rights endowed by the Creator, whether you're Jewish or Christian, tells you that rights endowed by the Creator come right out of the first chapter of Genesis that says that man was created in the image of God. And therefore, he has rights that existed before the state and ahead of the state. So once you decide in a government that was created, a constitution was created to protect that, that that's no longer something you're allowed to talk about. It's something that becomes completely detached from the very reason it was created. And, I'm not saying this to be a religious person. I'm saying that as a person who looks at our government, our constitution, that if you detach the constitution from that, you have made the constitution incoherent. And if you say as a constitution, you can't, it becomes, to me, it's like, how can you say it's unconstitutional to talk about this when the Constitution was created to protect exclusively that?
Right, exactly. And with that, we must end. And that's a great way to end. Steve Coughlin, A Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. We'll put the link to that on our Facebook page. And also that interview with Catherine Herridge, and also the article about Robert Mueller purging the manuals of the FBI training. It's just an amazing story, and it will give you more detail. Steve, thank you so much for joining me today. And for the rest of you, thank you for listening. This has been Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.